You and I want to say, met on a flight to Australia?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, because, like, obviously, like, I knew ago. Who you were. And you were just nice. And are you the one that gave me the sleeping pill, or is that Pete Holmes?
Pete Holmes.
Every time I'm like, who gave it to me?
Were you the one who gave it to me? No, because on the flight, Pete Holmes took some sleeping pills.
Multiple, because he's so big.
Do you remember what he was doing on the flight?
No.
Okay, he was super high from sleeping pills because we were flying to Australia for the festival in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And he, like, held court in the flight. Like, he was, like, doing 5 minutes. Like, he was telling stories. He was doing
bits. Were they laughing?
People were laughing.
No, they weren't. You're trying to, like, not to sell him down the river.
Welcome back to Working It Out. That is the voice of the great Eliza Schlesinger. By the way, I say Schlesinger wrong during the episode. I apologize to Eliza. She's a great comic. I said Schlesinger. And look, as a Mike Birbiglia, who has a last name Birbiglia, I know what it's like to have people pronounce your name wrong all the time. So I apologize. Birbiglia, literally, yeah, we talk about this in the episode, but we have that in common, that we're challenging last names. We have a great chat. She's an extraordinarily talented and prolific comedian. 6 Netflix specials. The recent one is called Hot Forever. The last one was called Elder Millennial that she shot on an aircraft carrier. She has a new book called All Things Aside, which is great. It's a big week, by the way. We just had our first weekend of The Old Man and the Pool on Broadway. I can't thank you enough. It was packed. The crowds were great. The set looks great. By Beowulf Barrett, who actually has a book out right now about theater set design. He's designed hundreds and hundreds of theater sets. And the whole design team is just phenomenal. Hannah and Aaron and Seth and Tony, and just like an extraordinary group of people came together to put on this show, and now I'm doing it for 70 performances. Count them, 70 performances on Broadway. It was just, I mean, I feel so lucky, and there's not much I can say about it. I'm thrilled that you folks are coming, and if you want to get the best deal on tickets, you can go to birbigs.com to find the details app. What I've experienced is if you get the TodayTix app, you get phenomenal deals on tickets. I mean, I saw tickets on there all the way through Christmas for 30, 40, 50, 60 bucks that are really good seats. So I would do that because some of the tickets prices are wild. Some of the ticket prices are like, wait, do I get an airplane too? And I apologize for that. I have nothing to do with that. Some things are out of my control. I hope you enjoy my conversation with the great Eliza Schlesinger. It's funny, like, until you have your friend on a podcast, you don't know where they're born. You're East Coast. No, not really.
I was born here.
But then moved.
Yeah, when I was, like, 2.
Oh, okay.
But sometimes people get bios wrong, and it's, like, a New Yorker, and I'm, like, in my heart and in my pace, I'm a New Yorker.
Right.
And my family's from New York. But I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
Nobody gets that.
That's interesting.
I know.
Were you military family?
I'm Jewish.
Oh, I thought military family because when you did the Elder Millennial special on, like, that aircraft carrier, I was
right.
Like, I wonder military family.
No, I am very lucky to have gotten to do USO shows.
Yes,
I've done a lot
I knew
of
that.
Them.
Yeah.
And a lot of comics do, but they really, the first one I got to do, like, really tugged at my heart. Like, it was such an eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
If you are a civilian that doesn't have military family and you don't come from a place where a lot of people go into the military.
Yeah.
So going on a Christmas tour, going to Iraq, going to Afghanistan, and seeing firsthand, I get goosebumps,
yeah.
What these people give up, it just hit me, and it has informed my patriotism
yeah.
in a very specific way. And so I don't know if you've done one of these, like—
Yeah, I've done some, but I haven't done as many as you.
Well, it's not, I mean, you know, all my stories. We did a show on an aircraft carrier in Bahrain, like in the
wow.
ocean, and it was such a cool feeling to see the thing open and all the servicemen and women are there. So I came home and Netflix was like, this is kind of bullshit. They're like, we want higher production value out of our specials. I'm like, really? Because I've never seen anyone.
That's so funny.
Like, this isn't, we're not Tom Cruise. Like, I'm not flying my own plane. So we found an aircraft carrier because I wanted it to feel like it did when I did it.
Nice.
But like, no one else got that note. Like, I don't see anyone else spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I thought that about your new special too. I was like, production value on the special is much higher than your regular special.
Oh, that's so funny. I tried to keep it down.
Really?
Because I was like, nobody, if the jokes aren't fire, nobody cares if you did it on Mars.
I know what you mean.
It's just a blue background. Wait, this one, the one that comes out on the 11th.
The hot one.
The hot one.
Forever hot.
Forever hot. I was just like, they were like, how's this background? I'm like, it's fine. As long as it's not red, it's fine.
You and I have this thing in common, which is like, neither of us are affiliated with like some kind of big comedy institution that it's like Eliza from blank, Mike from blank.
What do you mean, like Boom
the
Chicago?
Daily Show?
Oh, right.
SNL.
Neither of us have a job.
Right. We don't have a job. From Will and Grace, from this. You know what I mean? Like, there's no single thing. Like, you're just Eliza from Eliza. I'm just Mike from Mike. Like,
do you like that, or do you wish, like, deep down, it was like from Big Love?
That's what I was asking. Is early on in my career, I was like, desperately wanted to have one of those Mike from blank, a big thing where people go, oh, right, from blank. And now that I'm not, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that I'm not. Because it like sticks you to that thing forever.
I guess it's kind of like it is what it is, so you may as well be okay with it.
Yeah.
For the longest time, it was Last Comic Standing, which was cool. I can't believe I'm even bringing it up because I hate
talking about it. Oh, my gosh, that's so funny. I forgot that you were on that.
Thank you.
Did you win?
Yes. And it's like such a...
You would win. You're a winner.
Thank you. It was such... Like, I'm 30 and I won when I was like 24, 25.
Holy cow.
I'm always reticent to bring it up and here I'm like... Bleh. But I only say it because like for a little bit, that's cool. But like once a show has been off the air for a decade, like...
Yes.
It's like...
It's time.
When you're like a tertiary cast member and you're like still signing fan art and you're like, remember my arc that I had on season two? So you just hope that... You have accomplishments that eclipse that.
Right.
That's what it is. Not proud of it, just like, all right.
But you know what's painful about it, I find, is that it leaves the marketing of you in other people's hands. Ooh. So I bet sometimes you'll show up at a gig and they'll be like, she'll say anything, Eliza Schlesinger, or some kind of like hokey thing.
Can you tell me about yours?
What my version is?
Yeah, because I know what mine is.
Mine will be like, he's clean. He's clean. Can't even get it out. It'll be like, he's clean cut and fun and clean kind of thing. Like
Christian humor.
Yeah.
Church humor.
Right. Although over the years, fortunately, they now say storyteller, which I'm fine with.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
like,
good.
Okay, that's good.
That's
but
like
it used
another
to be
revolution.
Like clean and young.
It is clean. That's, you are synonymous with that.
I know. I don't want to be.
I've heard, even before I knew you, it's like Mike Birbiglia, like clean. Are you clean like Birbiglia?
I don't want that, but that's what happens.
But I think there's, I'm glad you have that struggle too. Because particularly for women, and this is almost any woman in comedy, you get words, you get adjectives that men don't get, like brash.
Yes.
You get opinionated.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Like unfiltered. And I'm like, this is very rehearsed. Like I chose these words very specifically. Yes. This is not like just diarrhea coming out of my brain, like unfiltered diarrhea. And for women, it's always a sign like, wow, she's just a nut and they'll say anything.
It's almost like they're apologizing for you you walk on stage.
It's like a, just so you know, you're in for like a sexy good time because she's brash. And it's like, because I said the F word.
Right. What any other male comedian would say and you wouldn't use that descriptor.
And you're clean, but I'm also like, I guess for all intents and purposes, I'm clean. Like I don't say like pussy. Like I don't. I'm not as blue, but I also think there's a gradient to it. And it's also like, what is the, are we at a YMCA fundraiser? Like, what is clean?
Yeah.
God forbid you say like, I had sex when I was 20. It's like, oh, X rated.
Right. Totally.
Raunchy. That's another one women get.
Oh, raunchy. Right.
I hate that word.
Well, it's interesting. Like in the Forever Hot special, you just go, I guess to use a basketball analogy, because everyone knows I'm great at basketball.
Take it to the hole. Take it to the hole.
Yeah, you took it to the hole. You got in the paint.
I wanted to call it Go Hard in the Paint.
Go Hard in the Paint.
But I was like, my whole demo won't get
for
that.
For real?
I just felt like it was a little too inside baseball as a basketball term.
No, but you went hard in the paint with pro-choice stuff, with Roe v. Wade stuff. And it's like, I was like, kudos. Like, And it's so definitively just, I'm going to lay this out for you. It's not subtle. It's not in the middle of like a 10-minute chunk about women's reproductive rights. It's like, just so you know, this is my stance on this, and I feel very strongly about it. And I was like, my hat is off to you, because you have a very wide audience, and there's 30% of people who don't agree with that.
Sure.
And your audience is like 100% of people. Like, I think you're one of those people who is like, you have mass appeal. Like, people, like, you know, red and blue people like you a lot. And so, like, did you weigh the cons and the pros and cons of that whole?
No.
I
think that in your life, there are things. Every once in a while, there are hills that are so big you have to die on them. You cannot pick every battle. And I think some comics make the mistake, you know, if you are someone who wants these liberal things, like if you are constantly beating your drum, people are going to tune out. So it's all about, how do you make it digestible?
Yeah.
And how do you, I will look back on my career, and if I did not, in my life, and there are certain things, like, you want to be able to say, like, I stood for that in a meaningful way, and I am fortunate enough to have that microphone. And I do think my fans who don't think like me, the feedback I get is, I don't agree with your politics, but I like your comedy.
Yeah.
And I think that's powerful too.
Yeah.
That they're like, because there are comics that say things that I don't agree with. I'm like, but they're still funny. There are people we know who I'm like, that is a horrible person who did bad things, but his jokes are fire.
Yeah.
Like, you can separate the two.
Yeah. Margaret Cho wrote the foreword to your book, and it's interesting because she talks about meeting you at the Washington, D.C. Improv. And you know that that's where I started working the door.
I didn't know that.
Where I started comedy.
Washington, D.C.
And I opened for Margaret Cho.
Well, she's a tentpole of comedy.
She's a
delicate beast.
She's a legend.
She's also so kind in a way that someone who's been working in this industry for that long doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And just always delightful to talk to. Funny. And, you know, she was an Asian woman with her own sitcom, and everybody
was huge.
It that happened. And it's so cool that Asian comics and Asian Americans are getting this moment now where we're like, oh, you know, you're not a stereotype, but like, she was there.
Oh yeah.
At the forefront.
Well, she's an example of like, before people were going out of their way to program diverse talent in different spaces, she broke through before that.
Yeah.
How good she was.
And different and fully tattooed with the softest skin. Delightful
the softest
to be with. Her skin's so soft. And she's just, nothing phases her.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen her be like, wait, like, there's no, I'm sure there is anger because she's a comic, but just steady.
Yeah.
With great style.
When I opened for Margaret, I was like, oh, you can do comedy that isn't the typical club, road club comedy.
Yes.
And your audience will show up. Like, her audience came to see what she was doing, which was like storytelling.
Yeah.
This is like very seminal thing. Who did you, when you were starting out, who were your people where you were like, oh, you can do it like that?
I didn't have any.
You didn't have it.
It's such a solo sport.
Yes.
And I didn't start at an improv, like I didn't start working somewhere, and I had a day job, and I just started doing stand-up. No one said I could, no one said I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I found like a group of dudes that like ran a show at a bar, and they gave me time, and that became my group of like these like middle-aged men that I was friends with.
What bar?
It was called, it's so sad, it's a bar that doesn't exist anymore above a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore.
Wow.
It was called Room 5, and it was like a place that people went for comedy. It was above Amalfi Restaurant.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, they gave me some time, and then they said I could come back. And so you just sort of, there's no handbook for this. I didn't know about the Comedy Store, and I knew what the Improv was because I would pass it. I passed the Addison Improv on my way to school when I was in high school.
Oh, that's a great club.
Yeah, like one of the last clubs to like outlaw smoking indoors.
Oh, that's really funny.
But I just kind of cobbled together this experience, and you make your friends, and then I found out, who knows how, the Comedy Store, and you become a regular there, but there was no, like a lot of people are like, oh, I wrote on this show and that's how I met my friends. Mine was just, and I became a headliner so young because of the show.
Because of Last Comic Standing.
So you're just out on the road with no guidance.
Wow.
No comics telling you, no women saying, here's what you do. And I'm just, in my mind, I'm like, I'm the only one to ever do this because I'm just making this up as I go.
Yeah.
I would watch Pablo Francisco.
Oh, interesting. He's so good.
He's so good, and he does sounds. Like, I like energy.
Yeah, I know. You do great voices and sounds and all that stuff.
It's my brother and I did it growing up, so I think I just sort of gravitated to the sounds that I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
I enjoyed, you know, when I was young, like Cat Williams. I love energy.
Oh, Cat Williams is so funny.
It's why I like watching Sebastian. Like, I love movement.
Yeah.
I love energy.
Clearly.
And so it's not people that I take after as much as when I started doing it, you know, and those were the things that I liked. But I, as a comic, you don't watch enough because you're working, so you tend to leave.
Yeah.
At least I did. So I just sort of made it up.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you didn't have, but then who did you, even on TV, who'd you watch?
Growing up, it was always sketch.
Oh,
and it was,
that's interesting.
My parents were divorced and my mom let me have a TV in my room. And so you'd like turn it on after you have to go to bed, you know, and I would sneak in like Martin because it was on TV. You don't know.
Yeah.
I'd watch Martin. I'd watch a little bit of Bernie Mac. I would definitely watch In Living Color. I watched Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
Before you could fully grasp how brilliant it was, what they were doing.
Yeah.
You know, I was in middle school. Watched The State. I was a little young for The State, but I still remember like, yeah, I want to dip my balls in it. And then Nickelodeon had sketch shows and I would watch those, and you're not judging it. It's just, I always say it's what like wafts into your comedy baleen, like,
yeah,
whatever show you had.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you beg your mom for like a VHS copy of like Wayne's World and you watch Saturday Night Live, and I would write my own sketches, and you just, it's whatever was available.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have like, my brother listened to Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor, or my dad loved Carlin. Like, I didn't have any,
yeah,
of that. So you're just piecing it together, which is why I always find it so frustrating, because I'm a comic and it has nothing to do, like, as I get older, it's like we have to stand up for women, but I didn't get into it despite being a woman, in spite of what anyone said, I just did it.
Yeah.
And so it's always this like, you're not asking it, thank God. It's like, what women growing up? And I'm like, I didn't think of it as gendered.
Oh, interesting.
I never thought as funny as gendered until I got to LA and people started saying why women couldn't. And I was like, but I already did. And they already did.
Wow.
Yeah. So I always thought of myself as one of the guys.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just never thought about it. Because my mom was funny. So to me, women just say things.
It's really funny. My mom is really funny too.
Yeah.
The you do give, like, in your new special, you do give advice to women and men. You're, yeah, like, my advice for women is this. My advice for men is this. I won't give away what it,
right,
is. But it's like, do you ever get pushback from people being like, wait a minute, that's not true of all women, that's not true of all men, or whatever the thing is?
I mean, then comedy is so about specificities and generalizations to get you into the specificity. And it's like, cool mood killer. Yeah. Yeah, all women don't wear bras. You got me.
Oh my gosh.
I'll make sure to add that into the, yes, director's cut.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like, these things are true.
Right.
And I think, too, if it's from a funny place versus, like, men are idiots, like, there goes that. Like, no one wants to hear that. So,
right.
And also, I believe if it is your experience, it's yours to talk about.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think the people that are all, like, the whataboutism or that's not true, it's like, okay, it may not be true for you, but keep in mind, you laughed when you thought it was true for everyone else.
That is so funny. Yeah, no, it's – I think one of the strangest things about comedy right now is that we're living in like an age of decontextualization. So people go,
oh my God, that's, you know, so true.
Of like, this famous comedian said this, and it's completely out of context.
Yeah.
And it's in the same font that the New York Times is in,
right,
and whatever.
Right.
And then you're like, right, but it's like literally in the context of like a 1 hour piece of comedy.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, people forget that this is art. Like, you have created an hour. It's a story. There's, at least for me, and I know for you, like, there's a through line.
Yeah.
There are arguments and examples to support the argument. You are not,
yes,
unfiltered, like, pulling this out of your ass. Like, this is, you worked on this. And,
yeah,
there's humor to support it so that even if you don't agree, it's still funny.
Yeah.
And people just want to be outraged, and we all feel so hurt, so that when someone does say something, let's say it's a gay joke, you know, rather than realize, oh, and he also made fun of himself and these two things prior, they're just pulling out the thing.
Right.
If you extrapolate anything for anyone, they can look like the worst human.
Oh, yeah.
This is a living, breathing piece of art.
Yeah. Working It Out is supported by MasterClass. We are thrilled to be supported by MasterClass. It's a streaming platform that makes it possible for anyone to watch or listen to hundreds of video lessons taught by more than 150 of the world's best. So, for example, Working It Out listeners might be interested in filmmakers or writers like David Sedaris, Issa Rae, Martin Scorsese, Werner Herzog, Malcolm Gladwell, and more. Margaret Atwood teaches creative writing. Amy Tan teaches fiction, memory, and imagination. That sounds fantastic. Whether you're watching MasterClass on TV, listening in audio mode, or in the app, or on their site, the quality speaks for itself. This holiday season, give one annual membership and get one free at masterclass.com/perbigs. Right now, you can get two memberships for the price of one at masterclass.com/perbigs. Masterclass.com/perbigs. Offer terms apply. Working It Out is brought to you in part by Liquid IV. We're thrilled to have them as a sponsor. You don't need to be an athlete to need extra hydration through your day. Sometimes you forget to drink water. So it's perfect for that. It's great for me because I really have to stay hydrated, and it's great for long travel days, which is so much of my touring life. This is a very popular product among the staff of Working It Out. My brother Joe said, it's a great alternative to coffee in the afternoon when I want to pick me up. It's sweet, but it's only got 45 calories. It's a great thing to have in the office. Grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier, sugar-free, in bulk, nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code WORKING for Working It Out. Working is the word, WORKING at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop. Better hydration today using promo code WORKING. So we asked these questions for what we call the slow round. Did you have a nickname in your life that was really good or really bad?
Really good or really bad? I'm not a, people don't really give me nicknames.
Really? Your last name is like mine, where Schlesinger, I would say 90% of people spell it wrong.
Literally 100. Like, it is deeply anti-Semitic, but also I just like let it go.
I always say to people, when they look at my name, you know, the barista or whatever, and they'll go, and I'll go, no, don't worry. I go, don't worry about it.
He just takes a knee.
It's like, I always go like, whatever comes out is fine.
Yeah. I don't care, especially for barista. I'm like, spell it however you want. Who cares?
Yeah.
A pet peeve of mine is when I do a podcast with someone I don't know and they open with, is it Schlesinger? How do I say it? I'm like, do your fucking job and learn it before we're on the air.
Yeah.
This is so unprofessional.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It should have a C and it doesn't. So they're not wrong when they misspell it. There should be a C.
Do you remember being an inauthentic version of yourself where you look back and you're like, oh, I'm so embarrassed of that phase or whatever?
I have this chapter in my book about like how hard it is to not be yourself.
Mm.
And there was a guy, and you might even know this person, but I'm not going to say the name. I'm not even going to look at you when I say it.
Oh, gosh.
Who I, like, had a crush on forever, and we, like, finally got to, like, hook up. This was, like, in LA, like, in my 20s, and I accidentally bit his penis, and it wasn't hard. It was just, like, a grazing, but that's uncomfortable. Like, I can see your body language even as I describe
it. Yeah, it's hard.
And in the moment, I leaned into, he like winced as one should, and I leaned into it because I was like, maybe if I act like I meant to, he'll be like, oh, she's so dark. I love it. And I did it again. And this, like the session was over. Like we were done. We were never going to be together. Because I thought maybe like if I leaned into it, he'd think like, wow, she's so complex. And I do love having my penis slightly bent.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't a bite. It was a graze, but it's still. And it's just that thing where especially when you're younger, if someone's a little older and it's, You're just like, you're like, how do I make this work?
Yes.
I had a crush on
you. Yes, and. Yes, and. I bit his penis and then.
And I did it twice.
And then I'm going to do it again.
And I, there was no Uber, so I did have to sleep over, but I left the next day.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
You totally know this person too.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you off air.
I can't tell you.
Oh, you can't say?
No, I can't. because I think this person never told anyone, and I really respect that, even though there's like nothing to be ashamed of. But it was just, it's less about that and more about any time, particularly as a girl, when dating, like the things that you do, thinking like, I'll be this girl.
Right.
And it's like, oh no.
This is who I am.
This is who I am now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. What's the best piece of advice that you've been given in your life that you used?
I wish I had one of those, like, my dad always said this, and I remember, like, who's listening to other people? Like, who's really like, oh, okay. And when someone's like, be kind, you're like, okay, sure, you first. And then there's advice that you know is true, but you really have to, like, keep repeat, like, nothing's ever personal. And you're sometimes it really is.
Right.
There's stuff
like
that.
That's one of the four agreements. Don't take anything personally.
Which is like, okay, call me when that actually, like when you believe that. Sorry. This is not advice. This is a bastardized quote that I live by from Casino that Robert De Niro says. It's basically either you're stupid or you're in on it.
Oh my gosh.
And he says, either way, I can't have it.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
And I use it not for so much interpersonal, but like in terms of dealing with like a dumb executive that fucks up something or someone on the booking side or just other people. Either you're too dumb to do your job right or it's malicious and you've deliberately done it wrong.
What is the, can you think of like a moment in your life that you didn't realize at the time actually affected the trajectory of your whole life?
Oh, okay. Okay, I have one. It's a good one.
Okay.
I didn't want to go on a date with my husband.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I had in my head like this set of criteria based on where I was in life. Like I didn't want a guy who like had roommates. You know, I was like 35.
Right.
Like, I don't want to like wake up like next, you know. There's like a guy who had roommates. I met him and he was like, I do have roommates. And I was like, all right, bye. And I think I like erased his whatever. And he was like, I'm not going to bother you. I'll erase your number. Like he was cool. And I think Jody Miller, another comic in LA, was one of my best friends. I think she was like, you should call him or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But then he explained to me, he said, I could live by myself, which is what you want. You want a man that's independent, okay, not someone that like, I drop off sandwiches. I'm on my parents' insurance.
Yeah.
I have no future. And he was like, I live with my friends because I'm a chef, so I work such late hours, so it's nice to come home to my best friends and we cook.
Right.
It was a more elegant answer.
Right.
And so I went out with him, and then I think we went out a couple times, and then there was that, like deciding to go on the date with him.
Yeah.
Because I almost didn't.
Yeah.
And then there was, like, I think we'd gone out a couple nights, and I was out with Jody, and I was like, should I call him and invite him out? She was like, do it. And I didn't want to, and I think the stupid young girl part of me that was like, just blow him off. Like, just be a hurt person and see if you can, you know. And I didn't, and I invited him.
Right.
And like, we've been together ever since.
Aww.
So it was just giving someone, like not cutting them off and just giving someone that chance that truly deserved it.
Well, you didn't cut him off based on like your own criterion.
Right. I let him explain.
Yeah.
Because we had context. It wasn't just out of context. So, babe, if you're listening, really glad I met you.
I love in your special where you go, I met my husband where we all met our husband on an app.
Let's not pretend.
Working It Out is brought to you in part by GameTime.co. That's not GameTime.com. I don't know. That's a whole other thing. GameTime.co is a site where you can get the best tickets for events, sports events, concerts. This is a thing that I'm obsessed with. I don't know about you, but I'm very experience-based, especially if I'm bringing my family. I just want to make sure that the seats are good and I can see everything. And I just think this is a great site. It's an amazing interface, last-minute tickets, flash deals, zone deals, easy to find and buy tickets for every kind of event in your area. Views from all seats in the venue, lowest price guaranteed, event cancellation protection, job loss protection. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code WIO, that's for Working It Out, that's WIO, for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code WIO for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Working It Out is brought to you in part by Helix Mattresses. Helix is our original sponsor. I want to say they were our first or second sponsor ever in the Working It Out history 3 years ago. It's an awesome company. They make phenomenal mattresses. The new one that I wanted to tell you about is called the Helix Elite. They've harnessed years of extensive mattress expertise to bring their customers an elevated sleep experience. The Elite Collection includes six different mattress models, each tailored for specific sleep positions and firmness preferences. Every Helix Elite mattress comes with a 15-year manufacturer's warranty and the same 100-night trial as the rest of Helix mattresses. Working It Out listeners get 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. For our Working It Out listeners, go to helixsleep.com/perbigs, promo code HELIXPARTNER. This is their best offer yet, and it will not last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. So this is a section called From the Notebook. This is just half jokes. This is just things that I wrote down.
Okay.
That aren't done. What I've realized about injuries, like, I'm 44, so I'm older than you, but like injury, like I have a shoulder injury that's resurfacing from like 10 years ago. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
It's like I fractured 10 years ago. I'm rushing down subway steps. I'm always in a rush.
I was in a rush.
I've nowhere to be. I've literally never had anywhere to be except being right here right now. And I trip. This is at the West 4th stop. This is at the cellar. And I trip on the fourth step from the bottom. Yeah, I know. And it was my untied shoes, laces. My dad taught me how to tie my shoes when I was a kid, and he wasn't around much. I trip, I fly in the air, I land, and I'm not exaggerating even at all. I land on the ball of my shoulder, and I'm lying on the ground in the subway.
Ew.
And I'm just like, writhing pain, just like, please, you know, help. People are just blowing past me. It's just like,
you're like, I'm not crazy. I'm like a homeowner. I'm a husband. I'm a father. Please help me.
People are just blowing past me like, you need help? No? Good. And
they did acknowledge you. Sorry.
They acknowledged and then left. I mean, no one helped.
Yeah.
Like, what's amazing is like, you know, I've done this a couple times on stage and people will laugh and I go, you're laughing because you've been one of those people.
Yes.
And I want you to know that we of the floor are aware that you do not wish to help. We're not fooled by your faux generosity. So the end of the story is...
We of the floor?
We of the floor. I like that part of it. We of the floor. And then a week goes by and I finally go to an orthopedist. And he does an X-ray, and he goes, "You fractured the ball of your shoulder."
Wait, can I write stuff down as you talk? Are we beating out the show? Oh, yeah. Sorry. Can I have a pen?
Oh yeah. I went to the orthopedic doctor, and he did an X-ray, and he goes, "You know, the ball of your shoulder is fractured." And I go, "Oh wow!" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I'm surprised it took you a week to come in. People who have what you have walk into this office every day screaming in pain, literally screaming." And I said, that's how I feel on the inside all the time.
Oh. Okay. Here's what I would say. Here's what I like for you. I'm surprised it took you a week to come in. You're like, yeah, I've been on the floor.
Oh, that's funny.
This whole time.
I've been on the floor.
I've been on the floor.
Yeah. We have the floor.
I love We Have the Floor. I just feel like, I don't know how you handle this. I would be like, yeah, I already have the joke, but
I don't have it. It's not in anything.
So you say we have the floor.
Yeah.
And then in my heart, it's like, you ever been a floor person to someone? And then they'll be like, yeah, one time. And then you get to have all that delicious crowd work of like the dumb thing they did to fall.
Oh, that's nice.
You ever been a floor person? A floor person is someone that, you know, like you see them all the time. They're, oh, like, help and I can't get up. I fall and I can't get up is the oldest floor person reference.
Right, the original floor person.
So that's, we have, so just talking about that. And then I wrote build out an answer. Why did I say that? Ever been a floor person? Oh yeah. Because what I missed was when you were laying on the floor, were you saying help Or were people just like, do you need help? And you said yes, and they ignored you?
No, it was just like, please. You know what I mean?
But they didn't. People would say, like, are you good? They would just say, are you
good? Yeah, people are like, are you okay? Good. You know, and then they'd be gone.
I would stay in that pocket. I'd just be like, I didn't say okay.
Yeah. I didn't say okay.
I'm definitely not. Yeah. Just saying it, like, the awkwardness, and then, because it really gets into the humanity of people. Like, New Yorkers are nice people, but they're so desensitized. Like, you would have to send up a flare to be like, this is not part of my day-to-day.
Right.
Like, I don't belong on this floor. And then the tag of I've been on the floor. But
I had no intention of being here on the floor.
I don't know how I got here.
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot to be mined from what other horrible things they might say to you.
Yeah.
Especially, are you good? And you're like, no. And they're like, all right. Because no one's listening. Like, the greater point is that nobody pays attention. Everyone's desensitized.
I think it is a good point. I think I always defend New Yorkers as being like good people generally, and I don't think that the cliche of that everyone's like a jerk is true. It's very like outdated. But
yeah,
that being said,
they're terrible.
No one picked me up from the floor.
Not only did no one pick you up from the floor, my biggest issue with New Yorkers is this very like, we're all really nice teddy bears and everybody's very smart here. It's a smart city.
Yeah.
I've never seen this many people throw cigarettes into the street. Like, how can you be smart but also, like, totally unaware of what an ocean is? It drives me crazy.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you have all these museums here, and this is, like, the epicenter of culture, and you're like, the cigarette just disappears after I throw it. That's
right.
Who's not helping you.
Right.
So people are just, like, myopic, I guess.
This is a joke about when I was starting out in comedy— I opened for this guy.
Who?
It was this era of my career where I was driving around to gigs that no one wanted. Like one-nighters at restaurants in the middle of West Virginia, like really far out shit.
Yeah.
Like really far out.
It's a state no one wants.
And I was opening for this guy. I won't say his name, but he goes, where do you live? I go, New York. And he goes, I went to New York once. I got my girlfriend an abortion. All I saw was the inside of an abortion clinic. And I go, yeah, you really have to spend a few days there to get the feel for the town.
Or what if, I love that. What if your answer was just like, no, you got the gist of it.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's funny.
I opened for a guy once who goes, this is when I was starting out, like these gigs were like terrible. I opened for this guy who goes, how much did you pay for that laptop? I go, I don't know. Like, I think $500. He goes, I get you one for $200. I go, really? He goes, yeah, it's hot. True story.
Okay.
And then I go, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
And he goes, I think I could get you one for $150. And then I'm thinking, I think I like hot.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe hot's my price range.
Okay, here's what I think. You have a laptop. How much is your laptop? The guy, you go like $500. The guy goes, I can get you one for $200. And you're like, I already have one.
Right.
You don't need it.
That's a good point. That's a fair point.
Free. You still don't need it.
Yes.
And then what does he say? He says, when he goes $200, and then $300, he goes, I can get you one for $100. I'd be like, now I'm starting to think, are you going to steal my laptop?
Right. No, as you were saying that, I was thinking the same thing, which is, in hindsight, I'm like, wait, if he was willing to sell a hot laptop, maybe he would steal mine.
But the bigger issue is he's solving a problem you don't have.
That's true.
You don't need
this. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. When I wake up, I don't know if you have this. When I wake up, I never think like, this is going to be a good day. I always think like, I think I have to make a list.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Is this a joke?
Yeah, that's all I have. Oh, yeah. That's all I have on it.
I always wake up hoping for the best.
Do you really?
I do. I wake up, I'm like, today's going to be a great day.
Wow.
And then it's even funnier when bad things like immediately happen. Like that's when you sprain your ankle. Like,
right.
People always talk about setting an intention. And I would only set one so that it's so funny when it gets dashed.
Right.
Like it's not funny the other way. It's not funny if you're like, it's going to be a shitty day and then it is. It's funny if you're like, bright lights, big city, look out, here I come. Oh, fuck, my hands.
Right. You're absolutely right.
So if you want to have a funny life where you can laugh, always hope for the best. That way when it inevitably sucks, at least it's funny.
Do you have that in the moment of pain?
Yeah.
In the moment of pain, you go, oh, this will be a bit?
Not so much it'll be a bit as much. In my book, I talk about having a miscarriage, which is like so heavy, but it's, I make it funny. And I talk about, I believe if one thing bad happens, it sucks. If two things bad happens, then it's just like, ugh. But if you can get, a list going of like three or more, it's like this cosmic receipt you present at the end of the day. So when you retell that story, it's funny. Like, it's not funny on Curb Your Enthusiasm when like Larry David does one thing wrong, but at the end of the episode, when it's been like 15 things, this
culmination.
And so like, I had this miscarriage and then it found out because I had a polyp. It's a long story. A polyp. So the doctor's like, you need to get the polyp removed and it has to be on your birthday.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going for a polyp removal on my birthday.
That's so funny.
And it has to be in Huntington Beach. God forbid we do it at Cedar Sinai by my house, which is an hour plus away.
Wow.
And it has to be in rush hour. And so just that of like going in for surgery on your uterus on your birthday is so sad. I mean, everything's great in the end. But it's not, it has to be funny at a certain point.
Yeah.
But I just think building a case for why you had the shittiest day kind of makes it better.
I like that. I like that in your special, the new special, where you talk about like how you had a miscarriage and you're basically like, most women you know probably had a miscarriage. Something like that. You say something.
You were almost a miscarriage. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you're just like saying these things is... We should be talking about this.
Right.
Like, I love that.
Thank you.
Because I think that's at the heart of, like, why comedy is even beyond just being entertainment is a meaningful catharsis. Mm-hmm. Like, why it's meaningful to me that we even do this and watch people do it. And, like, is that you're talking about stuff that, like, you're not going to talk and say in small talk at, you know, when you're talking to another parent or whatever.
Right.
And like I love that.
I agree. And I also think that's why Billy Crystal in Mr. Saturday Night, which I think is like the stand-up comedy movie.
Yeah.
He says you can't be funny during the day. There are no day clubs. There are nightclubs. You're not funny on the day show. You're funny on the tonight show. And what he's talking about is this is a thing that should be consumed in the dark.
Yes.
You are bearing your soul, your vulnerability for this audience of strangers with this tacit agreement that we all mean no harm. Or at least it should be that. And I do it in the dark, so I don't have to look at any of your faces, but I can just feel your energy.
Yeah.
And it is something that should be consumed quietly and privately, like a peep show, because we're talking about very honest things.
Yeah.
So it should be done in the dark because it's like this trade.
Yes.
I'm exchanging my vulnerability and you're laughing, which means you get it.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then the lights come up and then you get all the candy, all the applause.
I love that. That's a great way to end.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
It means so much to me that you think that.
Oh, that's great.
You're like the guy.
I'm not the guy.
You're the guy.
Some other guy's the guy. We do a thing called Working It Out for a Cause, where there's an organization that you think is doing a good job, and then I contribute to it. We link to them in the show notes.
Okay. I thought about this because there's so many good ones. But since you're going to make a donation, there's an organization called Team Rubicon.
Okay.
And I've done like some fundraisers for them, and this is an organization that takes vets, like military vets, and they get to help with like natural disasters and relief and like boots on the ground kind of stuff. And the more garbage that keeps happening, the more climate change induced disasters, the more ways that we're affected by hurricanes or floods or whatever. These people who are trained, things like this, are on the ground giving of their time. And I just think it's a cool organization.
Team RubiconUSA.org, disaster response. This is great.
It's just people helping people that are qualified. And these are people who are good at that kind of thing. And I think it's great that they're able to do that. And
wow.
I've worked with them before, so I knew that they were real versus like just Googling something before this.
Well, I will contribute to them. I will encourage other people to contribute as well. The link is in the show notes. Thanks, Eliza. And congratulations on all the great specials and your book and everything.
Thank
Holy
you.
Cow.
Thanks, Mike.
Working it out, cause it's not done. We're working it out, cause there's no one.
That's going to do it for my conversation with Eliza Schlesinger. You can watch Eliza's special, Hot Forever, on Netflix. You can get her book, All Things Aside, at your local bookstore. You can follow her at Eliza S on Instagram or on Twitter. It's at Eliza. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Joseph Birbiglia and Peter Salamone, associate producer Mabel Lewis, consulting producer Seth Barish, Assistant producers Gary Simons and Lucy Jones. Sound recording by J.N. Wang. Sound mix by Ben Cruz. Supervising engineer Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Marissa Hurwitz and Josh Upfall. My consigliere's Mike Berkowitz. Special thanks to Jack Handanoff and Bleachers for their music. Congrats to Jack on all of his success. He's, holy cow, he produced the Taylor Swift album that I was lucky enough to be in the music video for Antihero. He worked with Taylor closely on that one, and it's phenomenal. He also produced the 1975 album that just came out. Amazing. These are great albums. Jack is amazingly talented, and we use his Redhurst song in The Old Man and The Pool. We're so grateful. Special thanks to J. Hope Stein. Her book, Little Astronaut, is in bookstores now. Special thanks, as always, to my daughter, Una, who built a radio fort made of pillows, which is perfect for your sonic needs. Thanks, most of all, to you who are listening. I can see when you write the little message on Apple Podcasts. I know it's such a small thing, writing a little thing on Apple Podcasts, and you think, oh, I'll leave that to other people. But in this case, it's really the only way that people find the podcast. Like, literally, I mean, people like you who are listening to this, you probably found this because you've been watching my specials or whatever. Maybe you're a fan of Eliza. But if you really like this podcast, just go on, write, like, I like this. I like this. My favorite episode was this. It means the world to us. Thank you, everybody, for telling your friends and telling your enemies. You know, this episode drops on Halloween. So I know you know, let's say you develop an enemy on Halloween. Someone comes to your house and they throw eggs at your house, right? And that's an awful thing. No, I can't condone that. Maybe you stop them and go, hey, you put your eggs down for a second. I want to tell you about a podcast I really enjoy. It's called Working It Out. It's a comedian you may or may not have heard of named Mike Birbiglia, and he works out jokes with other creatives. It's fun. It's not scary. Hey, come back here, egg thrower. I'm going to give you some candy. See you next time, everybody.